I tend to revisit similar themes in my novels, and one of them is this yearning for family, which is not necessarily a conventional family, but much more of an unconventional family.
My bride is restless. She waits for all day.
I'm here, but I don't know where I stand.
I see a world of magic and wonder.
You're working the streets tonight. Damn right.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The UN remains unresolved on gay and lesbian rights. Olshan's night swimmer finds himself in Clara's hands, and Renee awakens, testosterone kills, and Saturn rises from the audiophile. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 26, 2003. The United Nations Human Rights Commission this week, for the first time ever, considered a proposal specifically regarding gays and lesbians. Brazil introduced a resolution called Human Rights and Sexual Orientation that expresses deep concern at the occurrence of violations of human rights in the world against persons on the grounds of their sexual orientation. It called upon all states to promote and protect the human rights of all persons, regardless of their sexual orientation, and would have required the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights to pay due attention to the phenomenon of violations of human rights on the grounds of sexual orientation.
UK-based human rights watchdog Amnesty International asserted that adoption of the resolution is the only way to end the intolerable exclusion of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people from the full protection of the UN system. Greater attention by the United Nations to this issue could make a real difference in their lives. Igelhurk, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, called the resolution a historic opportunity to advance lesbi, gay, and trans issues in international human rights law.
But the OIC, the Organization of the Islamic Conference, led by Egypt, Libya, Malaysia, Pakistan, and Saudi Arabia, forced any vote on the matter to be put off until the UN Commission reconvenes next year. They first narrowly failed in an attempt to prevent any debate on the resolution, then attempted to amend it to remove the word sexual orientation, and ultimately used a blizzard of procedural maneuvers to run out the clock as the Commission's six-week session drew to its close. Canada's move to extend the session failed. The OIC wrote to the Commission that the resolution directly contradicts the tenets of Islam and constituted a direct insult to the 1.2 billion Muslims around the world. It noted that sexual orientation has never been defined by the UN and even called the presumption of widespread human rights violations based on sexual orientation unsubstantiated. The Vatican also lobbied heavily against the resolution behind the scenes, particularly targeting Latin American countries, many of which were undecided.
About a score of the 53 nations that sit on the commission actively supported the resolution, including most of Europe, the Russian Federation, Japan, South Korea, Thailand, and Guatemala. South Africa was also in support, although eight other African nations were clearly opposed. Australia finally decided to support it after reports that it might not sparked heavy lobbying. But the U.S. was expected to abstain had the matter come to a vote, apparently in deference to its individual state's right to enact sodomy laws. Activists supporting the resolution took heart that it avoided an outright defeat and vowed to spend the next year lobbying for it.
While Brazil was leading the move at the UN to protect gays and lesbians, its state of Santa Catarina was putting into effect a similar law of its own. The governor of Santa Catarina recently signed the law to punish what it bluntly calls any aggressive or discriminatory act against any homosexual, bisexual, or transgender citizen. Businesses in violation will receive a warning for a first offense, a harsh fine for a second offense, and loss of their licenses for repeated offenses. The growing number of Brazilian states explicitly protecting gay and lesbian civil rights include São Paulo, Rio de Janeiro, Minas Gerais, and Bahia.
Mexico's parliament last week unanimously approved a federal civil rights bill that includes sexual preferences among its 14 protected categories. This will make Mexico only the second Latin American country to extend national protection from discrimination to lesbian gays, following Ecuador, and only the fourth outside of Europe. The federal law to prevent and eliminate discrimination prohibits what it calls distinction, exclusion, or restriction that impedes recognition or enjoyment or rights and real equality in terms of opportunities for people. The law specifically provides for equality in areas including education, employment, property rights, medical services, social security, organizational membership, and public accommodations, and also prohibits anti-gay harassment and defamation. It also creates a National Council to Prevent Discrimination to formulate and promote equality policies, provide legal support to victims, and investigate discrimination complaints against public officials.
There were civil rights advances this week in the U.S. as well. The Peoria, Illinois City Council voted 8-3 to add sexual orientation as a category protected under its human rights ordinance from discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations.
A bill to protect transgenders and transsexuals from discrimination in employment and housing passed the California State Assembly, and it's expected to go on to win approval from the state Senate and the governor as well.
And although Hawaii Governor Linda Lingle did not sign it, a bill to expand transgender protections under Hawaii's hate crime statute became law this week.
In the business world, FedEx Corporation, formerly known as Federal Express, agreed to activist demands to explicitly add sexual orientation to its non-discrimination policy.
Department store chain JCPenney Incorporated's board of directors endorsed a shareholder resolution to add sexual orientation to its non-discrimination policy.
But six municipal employees of Colorado Springs, Colorado, can kiss their domestic partner health benefits goodbye. This week, a newly elected city council voted 8-1 to repeal them. The previous council of this religious rights stronghold had enacted the benefits in December by a one-vote margin.
And on the religious front, the Presbyterian Church USA ruled against non-gay minister Stephen Van Kuyken in its first-ever church court trial for marrying gay and lesbian couples. The court, which also acquitted Van Kuyken of ordaining non-celibate gays, gave him its mildest punishment, a public rebuke. But Van Kuyken is appealing the ruling and says he will not abide by the court's order to stop performing the weddings, which he believes are theologically and scripturally justified.
Puerto Rico's Supreme Court last week decided 4-3 that the domestic violence law does not apply to gay and lesbian couples. Although the three dissenting justices were sharply critical, the majority found that the law was intended to strengthen the institution of the family, which they defined as a sentimental and legal union between a man and a woman. That ruling set aside charges against Leandro Ruiz Martinez, whose attack 2 years ago against his partner Juan Duval was the first gay case ever prosecuted in Puerto Rico using the domestic violence statutes. The law has since been used in gay and lesbian cases dozens of times for prosecutions and protective orders, and the High Court's ruling now puts them all into question. Puerto Rico's Justice Secretary, Annabel Rodriguez, asked the court to reconsider, saying gays and lesbians are entitled to equal protection under the law. The case drew added attention because it comes at a time when the legislature is overhauling Puerto Rico's criminal code, which currently includes a rarely enforced ban on all non-procreative sex acts. In the case before the court, victim Duval could testify against perpetrator Martinez only after being granted immunity from prosecution under the sodomy law.
And finally, views on sodomy laws and marriage in the U.S. created a tremendous media stir, as the Associated Press published recent remarks by U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania Rick Santorum. He's the Senate's third highest-ranking figure as the ruling Republican Party's conference chair and the party's likely future Senate leader. As a challenge to Texas's gay-specific sodomy law awaits a decision from the U.S. Supreme Court, Santorum railed against the plaintiff's case, denying there is any right to privacy under the U.S. Constitution. He said, "If the Supreme Court says you have the right to consensual sex within your home, then you have the right to bigamy, you have the right to polygamy, you have the right to incest, you have the right to adultery. All of those things are antithetical to a healthy, stable, traditional family."
Santorum is a self-described compassionate conservative, and Republican President George W. Bush has called himself a uniter, not a divider. Gay and lesbian groups of all political stripes joined leading Democrats and a scant handful of socially liberal Republicans in denouncing Santorum's remarks.
But Santorum was unapologetic, declaring he was simply stating his understanding of the High Court's ruling in the landmark 1986 Bowers v. Hardwick decision that upheld the state's rights to criminalize private homosexual acts between consenting adults. He did offer that, "I have no problem with homosexuality. I have a problem with homosexual acts, as I would with acts of other, what I would consider to be, acts outside of traditional heterosexual relationships. I have nothing, absolutely nothing, against anyone who's homosexual. If that's their orientation, then I accept that. And I have no problem with someone who has other orientations. The question is, do you act upon those orientations? So it's not the person, it's the person's actions, and you have to separate the person from their actions." As you might have guessed, Santorum is Catholic.
Also, not surprisingly, gay and lesbian groups continued to protest, and even more so when the president's spokesperson finally broke a string of no-comment responses to say that the president believes Santorum is an inclusive man.
But there were complaints from still other quarters. While heartily affirming Santorum's view of the threatened status of marriage, head of the Mormon sect United Apostolic Brethren Owen Allred also had objections. Allred was offended that the likes of Abraham, Jacob, and Moses should be treated, in his words, as immoral and dirty. That's right, the polygamists resented being listed with the gays.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 26, 2003. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Using all six senses can help free your mind from pressures of war all the time, as demonstrated by The Virgin Poet, all in this month's audio file, later in the program.
Let's go on a moonlight swim. To the raft we can race, and for just a little while.
Novelist Joseph Olshan's new book, In Clara's Hands, unexpectedly unites two of his best-known characters, Clara Mayfield, the wise Jamaican housekeeper from Clara's heart, and Will Kaplan, the troubled gay aquatics fan from Night Swimmer. This Way Out's Steve Pride chats with the openly gay author about the familial choices people make.
In his new book, In Clara's Hands, author Joseph Olshan has pulled off a literary casting coup. He's brought together the character of Will Kaplan from his gay-themed 1994 novel, Night Swimmer, and Clara Mayfield, the feisty Jamaican housekeeper with a healing touch, from his 1985 debut novel, Clara's Heart, the same Clara so memorably portrayed on screen by Whoopi Goldberg.
Chabubba, what's wrong with you?
Nothing.
Oh, it looks like nothing.
You wouldn't understand.
Problems of a boy are so mysterious.
Child, you can build up your arms and your booby with these weights,
but it ain't gonna make you get no taller. So in the meantime, you must not indulge in pity and shoot off your mouth.
This is Joseph Olshan, author of Clara's Heart, Night Swimmer, and In Clara's Hands. I tend to revisit similar themes in my novels, and one of them is this yearning for family, which is not necessarily a conventional family, but much more of an unconventional family, and then trying to find love in difficult circumstances, or two people that have a wonderful sort of yearning and chemistry for one another, but have difficulty getting along, or something happens and blows their relationship apart, and then they are sort of left trying to put together the pieces and shards and to figure out what happened. I mean, if you think of it this way, if you think of the person who wrote Clara's Heart was already kind of coming into his sexuality and experiencing the world from the outsider's point of view of somebody who was not going to ultimately end up in a conventional family, then it makes sense that he might be much more interested in exploring the idea of an unconventional family.
So what's the connection between Will Kaplan and Clara Mayfield?
She has come to America because she has a tragedy of her own, which is that her son was killed, actually committed suicide, and her family blames her for his death. So she felt estranged from her family and felt she needed to get away, and so she comes to America and starts to take care of these white children in affluent families in Westchester County, which is outside of New York City. So if you think of the fictional line in terms of my books, in Clara's Heart, she takes care of David Hart. So it would be presumed that later on down the line, she ended up with Will Kaplan and took care of Will Kaplan. These two characters are not to be confused because they're not the same. There are similar types of characters because they're white Jewish boys from the suburbs, but that's where the similarity ends. So she takes care of Will Kaplan and his brother Danny and becomes very close to them, but they're also teenagers and Danny's about to go to college. And during Danny's first year at college, he goes skiing down a very dangerous ski run and loses control, goes off the trail, and hits his head and dies. And the tragedy of his death basically unravels the family. The two parents can't handle it, and they sort of become estranged from one another, and they sort of abdicate their responsibilities as parents, leaving Clara and Will. And so Clara, as she did in Clara's heart, becomes like the mother slash governess slash housekeeper, all rolled into one, and she and Will develop a very, very close relationship, which continues even after she stops working for the family. And in fact, they've stayed in touch for years and years and years. And now in his early 40s, Will is having some difficulties and Clara comes up to Vermont where he's living to help him out. And that's basically the premise of the novel. It's certainly a thematic sequel to Night Swimmer. And there are certain elements that I explore in Night Swimmer, which I continue to explore here, which is the yearning for love and swimming out into the ocean, which sort of represents mystery and also love itself and swimming out into bodies of water, and also Will Kaplan's obsession with night swimming.
Since a gay man is at the center of the new novel, one might try to label In Clara's Hands a gay book. But Olshan doesn't believe such labels are still relevant.
When I wrote Night Swimmer, I was able to express and dramatize emotions that I had about love and sex, especially love between men. But I think more and more now for many gay writers, the idea of being gay is becoming incidental in terms of the fabric. And at least in my utopian view of the world, I would like to think that a time will come when someone's sexuality isn't going to really make a difference. And we won't have to have parades and, you know, assert our identities because it'll be totally accepted. And it'll just be a preference like a religious preference. And I think that my fiction is sort of moving towards that, because in my life, my sexual identity is really incidental. I just live my life and, you know, I don't choose my friends according to their sexual preference. I really choose my friends according to how I can relate to them and if they augment my life and if I can augment their life and if we can communicate.
Author Joseph Olshan reading from his book, In Clara's Hands.
The first day of the vacation, Danny began agitating about scoring some Jamaican marijuana. I will never forget the transition from the lush, verdant world of the hotel, where lawn sprinklers were constantly clicking mist over the green and tropical gardens, where the staff, dressed in starchy white uniforms, crisscrossed with tall, fruit-colored planters' cocktails and lunch platters packed below silver covers, to a beaten-down dirt path that led to the workers' quarters. The buildings there were ramshackle stucco, riven with cracks and broken rain gutters. The hotel employees were moseying out of their little rooms, buttoning their bone-colored shirts, hurrying to their afternoon shifts. We were stared at unmercifully, and then a man growled, "What you doing here? What you want with us?" "Us" made me feel that he was distinguishing between white and black. I felt terrible for intruding, but Danny smiled brilliantly and said, "We looking for turkle." My brother was such a good mimic that he was able to pronounce the name turtle as turkle, which was exactly how the groundskeeper had pronounced it. "Who tell you him name turkle?" the man asked us peevishly. "Somebody back at the hotel." "Him name Ralph Monroe. He's down the way to the right. You'll see a machete leaning outside his door." We walked along a half block of row houses until we saw the machete, its blade pristine and gleaming in the powerful tropical sunlight. Danny stopped suddenly, cocking his ears as though recognizing a sound. "Jesus," he whispered fiercely. "If that's Turkle's room, he's doing somebody." I listened, but all I could hear was a faint plaintive sound, like a kitten mewing. "Are you sure?" Danny turned to me, his fair cheeks flushed from the heat. "If you weren't still a virgin, Will, you'd know what I was talking about." "How do you know what I am?" I countered angrily. He raised his eyebrows and said in an exasperated voice, "Don't you think you would have told me if you'd lost it?" Danny turned his attention back toward the bungalow with the machete. Danny and I saw a young woman scurrying out of the bungalow, fastening a canary-colored halter top. She paused when she saw the uncharacteristic sight of two white boys loitering in the workers' quarters, gave us the once-over, but then her attention was riveted on Danny. A man appeared in the shadow of the doorway, and perceiving his presence, the woman pivoted around to lock eyes with him before hurrying away. Danny spoke up. "Turkle?" The man stepped into the sunlight. He was shirtless and godlike. His skin was burnished and very dark. The glare emphasized the cuts and ridges of musculature in his stomach and arms. He wore a pair of worn green pants that hung loosely from his hips and showed the slight dents of tendons above his groin. His beautiful head had a cast of nobility. A sick feeling of envy and desire washed over me, and I was speechless before him.
Why do you write?
I can't imagine not writing. I mean, I think I write to make sense of the world, but also to really ground myself. And I think that the process, when it's going well and I feel connected to the material, that's, to me, the highest possible human experience. I mean, I say that that experience equals unconditional love. Loving someone for who they are, not worrying about getting love in return. Those two things. Maybe they're the same thing. I don't know. You're giving yourself completely to something else, and you feel the connection of that.
This has been a conversation with novelist Joseph Olshan. In Clara's Hands is from Bloomsbury Press. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Let's go on a moonlight swim, far away from the crowd, all alone upon the beach. Our lips and arms close within each other's reach will be.
I'm Roman Kalinin from Moscow. You're listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. Оставайтесь на нашей волне.
Stay on our wavelength.
A New York duo and an 80s-influenced Baltimore songwriter make their CD debuts, and a returning artist introduces her second offering in this month's musical style-bending audiophile.
My bride is restless. She waits for a day. And I twist up the telephone wire. Maybe I'm nervous, but she's self-assured. And she's quiet, but never retiring. And she speaks with all of her voice, without compromises. She's full of surprise.
Robin Renee describes her second CD as an album about spiritual awakenings. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
I'm J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Audiophile. The album is called All Six Senses, and in it she uses a variety of styles to explore the complexities of life and love.
Boy, my influences really run the gamut from folk and the real singer-songwriter people, and also punk and new wave had a real strong influence on me, so I was listening to people like, you know, the Circle Jerks and Blondie and Black Flag and Devo, and somehow I think that all combined to make the music that I make now.
You gotta be in the right measure. It's a very good sign. It means that I love you, baby. Gotta be cruel to be kind.
Find out more about Robin Renee and All Six Senses at www.robinrenee.com. That's www.robinrenee.com.
Coming out of the anti-folk scene of New York City's East Village is a duo with the unlikely name of Testosterone Kills.
They are Tim Daly and Pablo Ratliff, and on their debut CD, War All the Time, they blend their harmonies around topics that are definitely not your father's folk music.
Take a look, boy. I'm the real thing, and when I'm gone, I'm nothing. A long, hard look, friend. What does it mean? The wasted time spent blending, it's offending.
Well, it's our debut CD. We're calling it electro-folk / anti-folk, sort of topical songs, catchy tunes.
And I think we're sort of in a lineage of people who value honesty over craft.
So I've been reading Allen Ginsberg and watching CNN. I'm a
You can learn more about Testosterone Kills and their album War All the Time at www.testosteronekills.com. And I'll spell that for you. That's www.testosteronekills.com. Heavenly.
Say you're only 17. Even though you might be lying to me, you're the object of all my dreams. Come take a ride with me down to my city, down to the city where the bright light.
Coming out of Baltimore is another debut artist who goes by the name Saturn.
His CD is called The Virgin Poet, and it brings us personal songs in a variety of pop styles.
Generally, I describe my sound as nocturna pop. It's sort of a mix of pop, urban, R&B, dance, and rock, and a slightly off-kilter, not quite mainstream brand of pop. With this first album, though, The Virgin Poet, it actually came off sounding retro, sort of like a throwback to 80s pop, which I guess is appropriate since some of my biggest influences were artists from the 80s.
Find out more about Saturn and his album, The Virgin Poet, at www.imsaturn.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas, 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Keep listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Christopher Gall, Graham Underhill, Fensberry, Rex Walkner, Steve Pride, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Elvis Presley performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks very much for listening on WPKN Bridgeport, Connecticut, Tasman FM Nubina, Tasmania, KXCI Tucson, Arizona, and more than 135 other stations around the world, including this community radio station.
Оставайтесь на нашей волне.
Stay tuned.